is Gail Sylvia, host of SylviaGlobal.com. Thank you for joining me today. I have the distinct pleasure of having myself be interviewed by Marcia Nelson, world-renowned author, wealth advisor, coach, friend, confidant. Marcia Nelson, are you with me this morning?
Absolutely, Gail Sylvia.
Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm great. It's a beautiful sunny morning, and it really feels like spring here at last.
Good. Well, thank you so much. You know, since launching Sylvia Global Broadcast and having more exposure around the world with the works that we're doing and the voices that we're bringing into the discussions on women, wealth, faith, philanthropy, and leadership, I'm now starting to get questions about who is Gail Sylvia? Who launched this? What caused her to do this? This is wonderful, but we don't know who she is. And sometimes that's hard to answer questions about ourselves when we think we know ourselves so well and we kind of take that for granted. So I would appreciate a conversation with you that will bring some of this out of me and help to introduce me and the thought processes and the spirit behind Sylvia Global. So take it away, Marcia.
I am so happy to do this. You and I always have wonderful conversations, so I see this as an extension of our continuing to talk, because each time we talk, I find out more about you. And I think a good place to start is if you give us a brief overview of what Sylvia Global is, because there's a lot of good, juicy stuff on your website, and at first glance, a person might not really know how to put it all together, but I bet you can tell us in a nutshell what the components are and how they relate to each other.
Right. Yeah. They reflect how I've lived my life and how I continue to view life, and that's from a faith-based perspective, in search of the good that is around us and not focusing on the things that we don't have in common by putting the focus on what we do have in common and highlighting the elements that make us different but bring value to the goodness that's around us and bringing that out of others so that they can be introduced and their goodness can be shared with others, and bringing it out in a forum that gives us a safe place to acknowledge and to see that we have a lot in common and that there is goodness within it. So the faith component is that I am a Christian, and whether people acknowledge a religious belief or not, in order to go into business or to serve in a leadership capacity or to be philanthropic, there is a component of faith. There is a belief that something will succeed and that it will be good. And so I really trust and believe that the Lord created me and everyone else that I meet in the world, not for me to judge in a negative way, but to get to understand and to know. And from that curiosity, that place of curiosity and adventure, I just meet the most wonderful people. I meet wonderful people everywhere I go, from the cab driver from Somali who takes me from the airport in Dallas to a meeting or a destination, to a cab driver once at 2 in the morning, Marcia, in New York, the first time I had been to New York, who gave me a tour of the city at no charge because I was talking to him about, well, where are you from? How long have you been here? To the heads of state and business leaders, the first ladies of nations, and we'll be bringing some of those conversations to Sylvia Global. The global piece is because I come from an ethnically very diverse family and community and have always been taught to treat others from a place of respect and love in a probably perhaps still unspoken, a place of curiosity. And, you know, that there are people definitely that I may want to avoid or I may not have something in common with and whose intentions, are, you know, might be different. And that's okay, as long as I recognize it, but not to be hindered by that, to move forward. I grew up during the civil rights movement. My parents were very involved, and my community was very involved. We were a community that when our family moved in to that particular neighborhood when I was going into third grade, it was predominantly white. And my friends, the first year of elementary school in third grade in that city were white and Hispanic, and a couple of black children as well. And then by fourth grade, I started to observe that there were fewer white children. And by sixth grade, there were only a handful of white children and mostly black and Hispanic. And again, those, you know, nothing discussed directly about it, but an observation. So I think that Sylvia Global is also a result of me being a good listener and observer, because I was shy growing up. And also having, you know, parents that were involved in civil rights and civil justice for all people, found that we didn't have to do harm to others. We could be respectful and still respectful of who we are. So my parents were opposed to integration from the perspective of busing. They felt that the children in our neighborhood and the families in our neighborhood had as much value that was worthy of children from the other side of town being bused to as they were expecting us to be bused to. So as a result of observing those adult conversations, watched the leadership role that a truck driver and a secretary, my parents and others in the neighborhood, the type of influence that they could have, and my grandmother too, who had been a domestic worker, could have at City Hall. And so then eventually I ended up being an exchange student to Switzerland. That's a whole nother, you know, experience that was phenomenal, that shift the course of my life, and eventually went to study at Waseda Daigaku, one of the most prestigious universities in Tokyo, Japan, and then was in Peace Corps, and then it just kept going from there. So I've always had a global perspective, again, from a place of curiosity.
That's a pretty big leap. What you've described is growing up in a family with a tremendous awareness beyond just themselves, and then to become a student in Switzerland. Was that in high school?
It was in high school. It was the first time that I had ever been on a plane. It was the first time that I had ever been away from my family more than a week with my grandmother. It was the first time anyone in our neighborhood and beyond had someone that looked like them and was from the neighborhood to leave the country and not be leaving in the capacity of serving in the military. So there was a lot of support around that. And that trip to Switzerland, again, stemmed from probably being shy and just listening, you know, a part of the routine in our home growing up. I have two sisters and two brothers, and one who's now deceased, but at the time, two brothers. And what part of the routine was Friday night, shampoo our hair, twist it up, and then Saturday, after we do our chores, then we take turns at the stove while my mother would press our and curl our hair. And that was an important time to listen to my mother's voice in my ear. And her thoughts. And there was a Shirley Temple movie on one Friday evening. And then I remember my mother saying on Saturday, just kind of talking to herself, but loud enough in my ear that it penetrated my heart, that she had always wanted to go to Switzerland. And I never knew that about my mother. I didn't know that she had any dreams.
Sure, and, she was
and,
mom.
And so even I think from that conversation, Marcia, that's probably a part of how girls fly, which the listeners will see as a link on the Sylvia Global website, how that evolved is that at all ages, there's this girl voice within women that never leaves, that's attached to a dream. You know, I always wanted to do, or I always dreamed of doing. And hearing my mother say she had always dreamed of going to Switzerland. And somehow I internalized that. And that was in sixth grade. And then in seventh grade, I had a teacher that I happened to mention this to who had lived in Germany. And I just said, I wish there was a way I could go and spend just a summer living with a family in Switzerland. And she said, there is. You can be an exchange student. And she and I started spending a lot of time in the library researching that, found a program, and junior year of high school, 11th grade, the summer of 11th grade, went to Switzerland and ended up seeing and staying also a few days with that teacher in Germany.
And then how did you go to Japan? Because that is an even greater culture shift.
One of the observations that I had as a student in college, and I went to Pitzer College in Claremont, which is next to Pomona, where I'm from, where I grew up, was that here was this incredible institution in the backyard of a neighborhood that I grew up in, and I didn't come up in conversations in very often in the neighborhood. And during that period of time in the 70s, I observed a lot of Vietnamese immigrants coming to the community, the local community, and was tutoring at a local high school as a part of one of my classes and had a Vietnamese family. Well, we also have some of my mother's closest co-workers were Japanese Americans. And again, I used to observe, you know, and listen quietly to their interaction and hear them talk about home and just kind of admire the beauty and the fun that my mother and her friends would have together. And so I had applied, I was looking to create an experience in college that would give me exposure to Asia in general. And the only program that was available was a one-year program to study at Waseda. And I hadn't taken Japanese at that point. I had taken an Asian American Studies class and ended up applying and was accepted. Did not want to go for a year. Again, the faith component, I prayed. Like, I don't want to go away for a year. It seemed like eternity, you know, and opened my Bible and there in Genesis, you know, was a Bible verse, which was one of the first experiences I had in that part of my faith walk, where it's like God's word just spoke to me that he'll be with me. And he's created this world with so much, and don't be afraid to go and explore it. And so off I went to not only Japan, but I end up living with one of Japan's wealthiest families. And they had built a compound in Seijogakuin-mai, which people from Japan will know is a very prestigious area. I didn't know. And I'm not sure it really mattered because it was their money. I just appreciated their kindness at opening their hearts and their home to me. Well, they built a compound, an additional house on their grounds. And things are very small in Japan, but this is a big mansion. They built an annexed house. And there were four of us from the United States and another young lady in another part of the on the grounds from who was Quaker, who's there as a guest of the Crown Prince of Japan. And to this day, actually, her sons are like my nephews. I call them my nephews. And then another young lady from Australia. And I ended up having as roommates on that property another lady who's Jewish, and a lesbian who was also much older, a non-traditional student, and then a Japanese-American girl who had grown up in South Central LA, which is primarily African-American community, and then a Korean young lady whose roommate in college was Princess Grace Kelly's daughter. So this catapulted me into a whole other realm, you know, of wealth and diversity, and then at this university. And I learned more about the world and people from other countries during that study abroad in Japan than I had at any other time. So that just kept feeding my curiosity, you know, wanting to learn more.
I can imagine that that year made you feel very at home with diversity, with people of different economic groups and different racial groups and different religious and gender groups. It sounds like a mini immersion for you in a way that probably made you really, really comfortable with a wide range of people and cultures.
It made me eventually, and it may appear and be that way as a truth now, but the reality is that there's always a discomfort at some level associated with being exposed to something new. I kind of regard it similar to jumping into a swimming pool. You won't get to experience, or at least I won't get to experience, the fun and the pleasure of swimming and being in water, in that sensation of going underwater and exploring and splashing around in water, unless I take the plunge. And sometimes it's cold, you know, when you first jump in. You know, sometimes it's uncomfortable. And then if you're not in the right current, then you can feel like you're drowning. And that physically almost happened to me in the Solomon Islands. When I went back, I came home from Japan right before my senior year. No, excuse me, I went my sophomore year, was gone, came back. Well, I wanted to go abroad again. It was like, gosh, I want more of that. That changed the direction of my life again. And the people that are a part of my life even today are largely from that period of time. Well, I ended up applying for Peace Corps, ended up in the Solomon Islands. And when I asked the recruiter, where is the Solomon Islands, he took a felt tip pen and put on a map of the world. He looked for the South Pacific. He said, oh, there's Fiji. I'll never forget this. This little cubic little office he has, no bigger than a closet. And he dots the map with his pen, the way someone would throw a dart almost. And he goes, oh, there's the Solomon Islands. And I end up leaving, you know, going to the Solomons, and this time I'm exposed to Melanesian people. First I was in Fiji for a little bit, and then went to the Solomon Islands, and had to go through training on a smaller outer island called Ciota before my assignment would officially begin, because school was out. And here I am in a place considered the South Pacific paradise. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. And I'm assigned to this smaller outer island, and school is out. And the only other people on that side of the island was the groundkeeper, which was a little boy who was probably about 15, another Peace Corps volunteer who had been out there for 2 years and could hardly wait to get home, and two friends that were visiting him from Big Bear, California, Newport Beach, which is where, you know, again, and part of the general area that I'm from. And we, in fact, knew people in common. Well, we had gone out snorkeling for black coral, and for some unexplainable reason, I changed my mask and my gear, and it kept filling up, and we were out pretty far diving, and I said, oh, you know, I'm going to go back and change mask. And I'll never forget one of the guys, you know, asked, he saw me and he wondered why it changed it. Well, I got pulled in by an undercurrent.
Ooh.
And pulled out, I should say, by an undercurrent, a very strong one. And they thought that I had made it back to shore. And of the two men, only one was strong enough to swim in that area in a current, which we had intentionally gone the opposite direction because of that. When they were going back, the one Paul who was had the strength said in his, he said, you know, Gail Sylvia should be back on shore by now. And the other guy said, oh, of course, she's been gone a long time. She must have just decided to stay with Pam, the wife of the other one, of Paul. And he said, well, he's turned around and he saw something floating out on the horizon. Well, it was my hair. He didn't know it. He said, I'm going to go see what that is. Well, it turned out it was me, unconscious, and had been pulled out. So I kind of, and I ended up having to come back without being able to fulfill the Peace Corps term. And, you know, a lot of thought, I had to put a lot of thought into that decision because the timing just wasn't right. So I think this is a part of what eventually becomes comfortable with accepting and embracing change and adapting to diversity. There are these elements where you feel like you're drowning, you know, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to survive in the midst of it when you're the when it's all new, and not being afraid to keep fighting to stay alive and fighting for what we believe is the good that is around us. And I think that near drowning experience was a part of what fuels my enthusiasm about bringing Sylvia Global to the world, is there is more good in this world than we're exposed to. And I don't believe that we have to be pulled down by the negativity and split by our differences, but that if we keep fighting to bring the good forward and showing that and hearing that and seeing that, it ends up saving our lives and our communities and our businesses and our health and our relationship with our Creator, God.
You know, I have never heard anybody describe this particular element of being exposed to a new kind of diversity and essentially going into a kind of a panic and a struggle, feeling threatened, that very strong discomfort. We see the evidence of it all the time. And one of my theories is that when there's a new level of diversity occurring and we get all kinds of resistance and upset about it, that's the first stage of people adapting to it. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. It actually is a way of people unconsciously trying to adjust to it. But the first stage is resistance and fighting it as though they're fighting for their lives. And that description of you're almost drowning and you're so honestly saying that in Japan, in a smaller way, that was also some of the discomfort you were having, I think opens the doors for many conversations for a lot of people, and that to have more conversations on that level would do a lot for our culture in giving permission for people to talk about their resistances and their fears and to see it within a greater context of adjusting and getting to the other side of it where there is ultimately going to be harmony. And that is part of the vision of faith that I think that you hold.
Thank you. You're describing it perfectly, that having more conversations about this and not being afraid or of the discomfort. You know, a long time ago, in college actually, I heard Andrew Jackson make a statement that America is not a melting pot, it's a stew. Mm-hmm. And that no matter how long you boil a carrot, a potato, and celery and onion together, a carrot always remains, you know, it's still the essence of a carrot remains the same. An onion does not become a carrot. A piece of celery does not morph into a piece of beef, you know. But what it brings as it was created and designed to be within to the mix is this incredible broth that would not have been enjoyed and created otherwise. So I don't believe that we have to be anyone other than our best selves in order to bring the best parts of ourselves forward. And I know we're running out of time, but I believe that there is...
We're not running out of time in the big sense. You just mean for this interview.
That's correct. That's correct. That's correct. That you're funny. That...
Well, I don't want any.
You're right. You're funny. That we don't have to edit our experiences in order to make other people necessarily feel comfortable. How we present them, and how we're willing to be open to hearing and learning from others is all that's required, and just being present.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Marcia. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You know what? I would like to have more conversations with you, and I know it is time for us to close this one, but will you come back and let me do a series of interviews with you?
I would be honored. If you will allow me an opportunity to introduce your incredible work and your voice and your heart to the Sylvia Global community, too.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Thank you so much, Marcia. Good talking with you.
Thank you.